shocked, as I said yesterday, how few people, I guess, had seen this picture. And so how about we talk to George Velasquez, and George will take you back. We'll actually listen to Mike Battaglia's call. You'll hear a bright, young-voiced Mike Battaglia call the race as well. But I want George to talk about that, and whether it was whether John Veach told him to do it or suggested it, or if somebody from Calumet, you know, mentioned it, or George saw Mrs. Markey at the fence. We'll get the specifics from George himself, Hall of Famer George Velasquez. Next, then, Sid, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we'll survey the weekend successes, and we'll talk about, you know, Rock Your World, obviously. It will be fresh and new, and Bourbonic as well. 10 o'clock, an hour in the books, two to come. George Velasquez next.
The latest racing. The races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this April 7th, and normally I would say on this Wednesday, but since it's April 7th, and since April 7th was the date in 1978 when Aladar won the Bluegrass, what a perfect opportunity. And we've been talking about Aladar and George Velasquez all week, it seems, since Rich brought it up on Monday. What a great time to talk to George. Anytime's a great time to talk to the Hall of Famer, Georgie Velasquez. Georgie, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you, my man?
I am good, and, you know, haven't seen you in way too long.
I know. Well, I have been, I went through surgery last March 23rd, and I'm still, you know, recuperating.
Wow.
But I'm doing better and better and better. So eventually it's going to be okay.
Well, hopefully we see you at Belmont in coming weeks, or at the very least Saratoga during the summer.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Well, I don't know if anybody's told you about what the conversation has been all week on the show, but the topic came up. Rich Migliori on Monday, we were talking about Aladar came up, and I brought up the story about you taking him over to the fence to see Mrs. Markey. And I put up the picture, George, and people, shockingly, people had either forgotten it or never saw the photo. And I thought you could really tell it better than anybody. How did that happen?
Well, that happens with patience. You need patience. Wait and wait and wait to the last few jumps of the race to get the best out of your horses, you know. So that's why I won a lot of photo finish.
Well, when you take us back to this day in 78 with him at Keeneland, you brought the horse over to the Markeys, over to Colonel Markey and Mrs. Markey. They were in their 80s, and was it something that you spotted, or did John Veitch suggest it? How did that happen?
Well, the word come to me that the Markeys are by the quarter pole, and they would like to see the horse. So I said, why not? So I did. I was on my warm-up. I was trying to warm him up. So I took it the wrong way to a certain part of the track and then come back the right way, and then I went to the fence where they were sitting, and they point to me. So I took the horse straight to that part of the track. And he was like he knows these people. He pricked his ears, and he was looking. And it was, apparently, this is that she haven't seen him, I don't know, how long, you know.
Since he left the farm. Since he left the farm.
Yeah, yeah, right. So it was a great moment for them and for me also, you know, because he won the race. And it was a day to remember.
Well, you know, there's obviously, I mean, whenever you and I talk, there's, you know, so much that we can bring in, you know, the Aladar. What can you say about the Aladar affirmed matchups and the way the things would actually spill out from this point, from April all the way to the last, you know, to the last meeting. This really was the kickoff, George, after Bluegrass, really, you know, this, you know, one of the great seasons in racing history.
That's right. Everybody talks about when you talk about the winner of the 1978 Triple Crown races, you have to say, you know, there was a firm. So you have to include Aladar because he was second on those three races. They never happened before. And to tell you the truth, if a firm was not in the race, I would have won the Triple Crown myself. Aladar would have won the Triple Crown.
Another
thing that I want to add up is that he was the best horse I rode on dirt. He was the best horse. He was so kind, and you do anything you want with him in the race. You want him to show a little bit of speed, he shows speed. You want him to come from way back, he come from way back. He was a very versatile horse. You could do anything you want to with him.
So. We're going to listen. We'll listen to the Bluegrass, and he, you know, he wins this. To be honest, there was not a lot of competition in this spot, but you know, it ends up setting up an amazing, you know, an amazing sequence in the Triple Crown, and you know, later on getting to Saratoga, you know, a controversial scenario in the Travers. You know, for your part in this, George, talk about you and Steve Coffin too, because that I know that the book, the most recent book about the rivalry, touches on it, but I don't think I've ever really talked to you much about it.
Well, I guess not so much, but anyway, Steve was a boy. He came in to New York at the right time. He learned a lot from the top writers in New York. And those days was Ronnie Turcotte, Maple, Cordero, myself. It was a very top colony of writers in those days. So, and he came in at the right time. So he learned a lot from us, but he got it in himself. He was very athletic. He was very smart. He was strong on the horses. He did everything, a little bit of everything. So he learned quick, and he put it to practice quick. And it was good for the competition and for the business, because he became the kid. They used to call him the kid. And the kid broke all kind of records. So it was a good time, good old time.
Well, out of curiosity, too, in the room, as you guys, as you know, with all the meetings that, you know, as the meetings were unfolding, what was the rivalry like for the two of you, you know, away from the racetrack?
Oh, there was no rivalry, really.
We used to
get along very good, very good. He was, like I say, he was such a nice kid. And sometimes I'll bring him to my house for dinner and everything. And we always get together and watch the films and all that stuff. So it was a good time, good old time.
Georgie, let's do this. Casey, let's listen to the 1978 Bluegrass on this date, April 7th, 1978. George Velasquez and Aladar.
And they're off. Chop Chop Tomahawk breaks quickly on the inside with Raymond Earl in special honor. Shabua up on the outside. Between horses, Five-Star General. And moving for the first turn, it's Raymond Earl, the leader by a length. Special honor second ahead. Chop Chop Tomahawk is third ahead. Go fourth now into fourth. Up on the outside, Shabua is fifth. Five-Star General runs a sixth. On the inside, running seventh. That's Entebbe. Alidar to the outside is eighth. And the trailer, Sunny Songster. They're moving toward the back stretch. Raymond Earl is on top by a length and a half. Still holding second now up on the outside. That's Go Fourth. He takes over second. On the rail, Chop Chop Tomahawk is third. Special honor is fourth ahead. Go Fourth on the outside, fifth. Then a gap of two to Alidar in sixth. And Tebby runs a seventh, followed by Sunny Songster and Five-Star General trails. Down the back stretch, it's Raymond Early. Opens the lead, now has it by five lengths. Holding second on the inside, that's Go Fourth. A length and a half back, special honor gaining ground. Shabua is now fourth. Alidar gaining ground up on the outside, fifth. They're moving into the turn. It's Raymond Earl on top by six. On the inside, Go Fourth, second ahead. Special honor is third. Alidar is gaining ground very quickly. He's going by horses. Now he moves into second. They're into the turn. It's Raymond Earl on top five. Alidar is second. Go Fourth holds third. Chop Chop Tomahawk now fourth. Special honor is fifth. Moving further stretch, Alidar to the outside. He moves by very easily, takes over the lead, opens it out to three and a half lengths. Raymond Earl still holds second. Go Fourth is third. Sunny Songster is making a late run on the outside. We have a furlong to run, and Alidar has opened the lead out to six lengths. Raymond Earl still second, followed on the outside by Go Fourth and Sunny Songster. But as they're nearing the finish, it's Alidar just drawing away.
At what point did you get the mount? What transpired?
Well, I believe it was we were in Saratoga when Ali Dog got beat with the firm. And then moving back from Saratoga back to New York, that's when I got the mount. I don't know how my agent, what it did or what Eddie Maple did. I don't know. But I know that I went up on the horse. And it was fun to ride. A lot of winners, a lot of great ones. And every place he went, he won. So it was a pleasure to ride that horse.
I'm just looking at, I think the first, looks like the first, and they don't, the chart doesn't have the race, but I'm assuming it's the Champagne. Your first mount was the Champagne in the Mud.
Right, right. And he won that race. And as a matter of fact, after that, that's when he started, our firm started beating me and beating me and beating me. And I said, you know what? I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. Let me just go back to some of the races when I first started riding him. And I was looking at the Champagne Stakes. And I noticed that like, starting from home, a friend was entertained with another horse. And he didn't see my horse go by. So I went by him so fast that my horse opened up three lengths. And when the firm saw my horse, he let go of this horse that he was fighting with and he tried to come back to get me. So I instead of beating by three or three and a half, I beat him four lengths and length and a half. And then I realized, I said, I'm not doing anything wrong. This horse is so competitive. he just loves to win and he loves competition. And that's what I said, well, he's, you know, it's nothing that I'm doing wrong. I'm not doing anything wrong.
No, no. What can you say? I mean, it just it was a happenstance of history. I mean that these two horses end up in the same crop and basically were healthy, you know, throughout the whole season and got to. It continues to be, George, one of the most, if not the most, storied rivalry in the game. I mean, and it's funny, all these years later, there's still people that just are on one side or the other, right? There's nobody that's a fan. I guess there's people that probably are fans of both, but chances are you've come on one side or the other.
Yeah, they're still like, well, hey, George, you owe me a lot of money because I bet Ali Dog. It's a grand race. I said, well, he's trying, I'll try my best, so I'm sorry.
Now, it there's nothing wrong with it. I'm going to run down the season. The Flamingo, the Florida Derby, the Bluegrass, you win those three. Second, obviously, through the Triple Crown, but then the Arlington Classic, the Whitney, and the Travers. And, of course, you know, put up in the Travers after the incident on the backstretch.
Right. Well, that race, it was going to be another encounters, you know, like that was going to be a horrible, very, very hard race to take away or to take apart those two, because my horse was in high gear by the time we got to like three and a half, four.
Yeah.
And Lafitte, he came in sharply because he saw me coming, but he don't know how fast my horse was coming. My horse, he was running so fast that by the time Lafitte dropped over, I was already there. And I bounced up against the fence and everything else. And, well, and you know what happened there. You know, they took left his horse, a friend, they took a firm horse down. And I was happy because they gave me the race, but I wasn't happy because I didn't want to beat him that way. I want to beat him legitimate. You know?
Sure.
those two horses, that was the best thing ever happened for racing. And those years, you know, and I would say in 100 years of racing.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And it just, it continues, you know, just the fact that, you know, when I put this picture up, George, of, you know, of you bringing the horse over to the Marquis, the reaction to it, it stunned me how, you know, how excited people were to see it. It really amazed me. So, that's what prompted this. And of course, anytime is nice to connect with you and, everything good. Otherwise, Marguerite, I heard her in the background. Everybody good?
Everybody's fine. Everybody's lovely. Thank God. And, I'm recuperating nicely every day. I feel better and better. So that's about it. Thank God we're in one piece.
Exactly, George. And I'm hoping I didn't realize that, I knew you'd had, the surgery. Gary told me, Siaka told me that, that you were laid up last year, but I didn't realize it's taken this long to recover. And, I'm glad I called. I hope we see you soon, and get healthy, and we'll look for you at the track.
Well, thank you for letting me hear your voice.
it's always too nice
because you're very knowledgeable when it comes to racing, and you was just great. You are very good at what you're doing, and keep up the good work, all right? Nice talking to you, Steve.
Georgie, thank you. George Velasquez, everybody. And it's been one of my most treasured friendships, and the opportunity to get to know Georgie, and see him regularly at the track these years. And, of course, you know, has been working as a jock agent, regularly. He's been part of the, he's maintained part of the game. He's just a treasure. And, we've had a few of these kinds of conversations, but I should do it more, because it's so nice to be able to talk to him and Jacinto and, all of the legends, the underutilized, frankly, as resources, because the public and the horse players, they treasure the memories they've got of these moments and of people like George Velasquez. So that was a lot of fun. Sid Fernando is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the weekend. And, of course, also the topic that came out this weekend involving the bleeding incidents. And at each of these weekends that, stakes are being run at venues that are restricting Lasix use in stakes settings, it's opening the door to, particularly for the older horses. And yesterday I brought it up with Brad Cox about Hidden Scroll bleeding, and there had been the post-race conversation, an interview with Joe Orsino, who had thought coming out of the sprint that Imprimis had bled. Turned out that was strictly from banging his nose through the gate, but it doesn't take away from this weekly scenario of horses that have been competing with Lasix for their up till now their whole career in most cases, and then having them taken off. And with each weekend and each time this comes up now, there's this brush fire of conversation or a conflagration and about the topic. And I on Saturday reminded people of the very level-headed and intelligent approach Sid took to the topic in 2019 in TDN. And it had, you know, technical information and practical approach to this discussion. And I think a lot of people either hadn't ever seen Sid's piece or had forgotten about it. So it was certainly timely, and Sid joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
Well, I'm sure you, to some degree, were able to see on Saturday, Sunday, that one of the most trending tweets around the industry participants were, "I really miss Sid on Twitter today."
That was nice. Yeah,
well,
thanks.
Now,
yeah.
That the reason was obvious. I mean, this is a discussion where, unfortunately, too often, you know, passion and a wild-eyed response, it makes it difficult to think through the topic, and that's why what you wrote in 2019 is so valuable, because it's a very clear-headed discussion of the topic.
Yeah, and it's a topic, you know, I've lived through as well, because
good point.
You know, I remember, obviously I've been around a while, so I remember when this LASIK first really started to be used in Maryland, you know, and then I've seen how it's evolved. You know, back then, it was pretty strict. There were stringent protocols to put a horse in LASIK. The state racing commission was involved. The horse had to, you know, be a certified bleeder and yada, yada, yada. And then it became, you know, obviously everyone, it became just commonplace for everybody to use it. But it's had a long history, and it's obviously been the lightning rod for a change specific to this piece of this enactment of the law, this HISA bill. You know, it's really been based around the controversy of that bill has been based around whether LASIK can be used or not. You take everything else out of it, and that's what it boils down to. And that's why there's been, you know, a big fight between the HPVA, HPPA, and the other group, the Jockey Club group. And, you know, as I pointed out in this article, you know, the Jockey Club proponents of anti-LASIK really aired a lot of stuff publicly that was detrimental to the game by, i.e., equating LASIK, which is legal and sanctioned by all racing commissions, as quote-unquote drugging, so that this topic of drugging in racing, which has been there throughout its history, took on, you know, a bigger profile, and to an unsuspecting public, you know, it became synonymous with everything bad in racing and drugs and drug. You know, there's a big difference between using LASIK, which is legal, and what Navarro, for example, has been alleged to have done.
Right.
But in the way the conversation was presented, it was all put on one big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they didn't do the industry any favors by doing this in a PR way.
No, and frankly, you can see when the topic you know, bubbles up and bubbles over, you know, based on a on an incident like, you know, like Hidden Scroll on Saturday. You can see on the some of the most just deflating and crazy notions. The one I see comments. Well, horses like this shouldn't be running. They shouldn't be allowed to race. Okay. So the $500,000 Mark DeTample spent to buy Hidden Scroll. No concern for the owner that you know, that bought the horse. No concern. I saw another brilliant maneuver, another really savvy comment. Well, the people that buy these horses, if it's a bleeder and it can't race, they can afford it. Who are these people even? How are they even allowed to have computers? It should be a qualifier. And you know, that's the problem with what's happened here. You can't even have a reasonable discussion. I mean, there has been some interesting things floated in terms of letting the older horses compete, maybe at a weight penalty. You know, if they're going to have Lasix and they're going to continue to race with it through the remainder of their career. I mean, I know we're trying to phase in, you know, starting the clock with the 2-year-olds. Okay, that's a reasonable approach. But these horses that are veteran horses that have been racing with it, it's not fair to everybody involved. The better, the owner, the trainer, everybody, the horse. It's ill advised.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, really one of his favorite points to this discussion is, well, they don't use it anywhere else in the world and yada yada yada. But you know, people fail to understand that neither do they race on dirt anywhere else in the world to the degree it's done here. And dirt racing is absolutely brutal on horses. Okay, it's a game that is so different than it is, say, in Europe, where here on dirt you break out of the gate, you're balls to the walls from the get go, and you know, it's a debilitating race here. It's the profile of the races here. You know, we just sprint down and you're just going crazy early. And in Europe, races tend to be, whether they're sprints, middle distance, or long races, they always tend to go easier early. And, you know, it's all about the finish. Plus, the surface is kinder. There's not that, horses aren't eating dirt. Also, the way stabling is, you know, horses are in urban areas here where they're out in the countryside and stables over there. I mean, there's a lot of different elements to what can cause EIPH, but EIPH has been in existence since horse racing has. The degree to it is probably more in this country because of what I just described, the racing profile. But, you know, getting back to one of your points, when you do phase out Lasix, for example, there are other alternatives that can be used, or, you know, people do use, but they're very expensive and they become the province of the wealthy. For example, right now, hyperbaric chambers are being, but they're busy. You know, like they've never been before, and only the wealthiest owners can use those, right? The regular guy on the, with the $25,000 claimer isn't sending his horse to a hyperbaric chamber. First off, it's very difficult to find. They're elite. They're exclusive. They're expensive. But the guys that can afford to can use it. that the other guys can't. So as a bettor, you don't know which horse has been treated this way now that they're off Lasix, you know. I mean, there's so many things, Steve, that come into play that, you know, cross-pollinate the entire ecosystem from bettors to horsemen to owners. And it's all been disrupted by, you know, this idea of, well, Lasix is the main problem in racing, which obviously it isn't. But I know for a fact, you know, right now there's a run on Hyperbaric Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Other methods, you know.
Yep. Yep.
And you're a schmuck betting a race, and you don't know which horse has been treated this way now that they're all off Lasix. You also don't know which horse has been treated with, Chinese herbs and other remedies. There's a whole group of treatments out there. They're expensive, and the guys that can afford to can use those now.
Yeah. Ron Moquette's going to be on after you, actually, and Ron has got some thoughts, and considering he's got a horse, like a Whitmore, for instance, you know, that he's, trying to maintain in the later stages of a fabulous career. I'm anxious to hear what Ron reached out and wanted to. Wanted to visit. So we'll get more horseman perspective. I invite people out. If you didn't see what I tweeted, Sid's piece from 19, I would suggest you go through and back through my timeline.
I know you got quite a lot of response to it.
Yeah, it did.
And you know, just one other thing that people talk about, getting rid of bleeders from the population and stuff, it's not going to happen because these horses do bleed. And as I pointed out in, you know, that piece, some of the best stallions have been known to bleeders through the years. You know, getting rid of bleeders doesn't necessarily make you produce better horses. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's ironic in a way that one of the most celebrated speed horses of recent times that, you know, was advertised and was lauded, rightly so, for never racing on Lasix because he didn't need to, run happy, you know, Run Happy has had a very nice recovery to his year, to his initial career this year with his first 3-year-olds. But, you know, it's not like Run Happy turned into Northern Dancer right away. He may turn into an excellent stallion down the road. He's doing very nicely. But just as an example, you know, just because you didn't race on Lasix doesn't mean you're going to, you know, produce the best horses. And likewise, if you raced on Lasix or if you were a bleeder, doesn't prohibit you from becoming a very good stallion. And all you have to do is, you know, give some examples in that column you referenced from the beginning of the breed to very recent histories. And, Northern Dancer used Lasix, and he became one of the greatest, you know, modern sire. So, people should get as much knowledge as they can before they talk about it, as with anything.
See what we hear from, see what Ronnie has to say when he joins us. And, I will send out the link another time too for those that were otherwise occupied over the weekend. So, Sid, I appreciate bringing it up and being able to address it. Let's dive into some of our pedigree focus and a stunning upset in the Wood Memorial. And, you know, from a pedigree standpoint, it's not such a shocker when you look at a Bernardini out of an Affleet Alex mare and a nice female family. It is notable that this horse is a four-generation outcross, as it happens, and the common ancestry doesn't tick in. He's 5x5 with Mr. Prospector and 5x5 with Northern Dancer, but he does have a four-generation outcross page.
Yeah, and, you know, he's from a grade two winner, Affleet Alex. Mary, you mentioned Dancing Affleet, who won the Delaware Oaks. She also previously produced the current four-year-old bitonalist, Avant-Garde, who is multiple graded placed and... you know, has earned some money. And, you know, Bernardini, his profile as a stallion has sort of waned in recent times. So this was a timely winner for him. What he's done, however, in that interim is turned into the most awesome broodmare sire.
Right.
So his daughters, you know, are just, you know, producing all sorts of black type winners. And we've mentioned that before here. So, you know, it's nice for him to come up with this colt. He had that other colt last year, as you recall, who was on the Triple Crown Trail. So, you know, he keeps knocking out these colts that show up. But ultimately, I believe, you know, his daughters are going to be the most important part, because as a young broodmare sire, they are really quite exceptional.
Now, in this circumstance, and it's funny that I'm going to bring up looking at Bourbonics, and, you know, I should mention... yesterday with Andy Serling, the potential that this is actually that this horse is supposed to be Bourbonic has been coming up. So there's now an alternate pronunciation to consider. But looking at the female family, you know, Chuck Zackney was supposed to join us today, but he ended up on a conference call that he's tied up through noon. But it just so happens that this mare that Bourbonic is out of, Dancing Affleet, Chuck was co-breeder of Affleet Alex daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He and Barbara Brown. And, you know, obviously, like as I mentioned, you know, she was a good mare. And Calumet actually bought her for $170,000 at the Keeneland November sale in 2017. So this mare was in foal at the time. So they were able to obviously get this a ready made this colt foaled in 2018 after they bought that mare in 2017. So. They're listed, Calumet is listed, obviously, as the breeder. But whoever planned that mating, I don't know if it was Zackney or not, but certainly he deserves a little credit, too.
I'll find out when we get if Chuck's going to be on tomorrow, we'll ask him about it. That's an interesting... an interesting sidebar, actually. And, of course, you know, the Cassius King team with the big win in the Carter on Saturday. The rest of this female family as we tick back. Mrs. Vanderbilt, a city dancer mayor. Hay up there, a cormorant mare, which'll lend some stoutness to any pedigree. And then an obscurity, Sid, that I don't think I've ever seen. Going back to 82, is the fourth dam, Tall Glass of Water, by the stallion Thin Slice, a Damascus Sun.
Yeah, a very, obviously a very obscure Damascus Sun, because he really doesn't appear in pedigrees that much. He was a black type winner. You know, one
Alf
of those,
Vanderbilt, Sagamore.
Yeah, Alfred Vanderbilt. The interesting thing about Thin Slice and ties into Vanderbilt is that Thin Slice's fourth dam Geisha, that's the dam of Alan Vanderbilt, Native Dancer. So the third dam, Tea House, is the full sister to Native Dancer.
Hmm.
But then Slice's third dam is the full sister to Native Dancer.
Impressive. There's some fun side notes in this that that are coming out. That Tall Glass of Water was a New York bred in 1982, you know, before it was fashionable.
Yeah.
That's an early.
And you can see that, you can see that the family has had, you know, Northeast regional influence because,
yeah,
the Cormorant was a horse that stood in New York. City Dancers stood at the Ponds Farm in Maryland, and you know, Fleet Alex, although a Gainesway, has a regional relevance with the ownership. So, you know, this is not a particularly, it's something that is built around this very good dam by Fleet Alex. And like I said, she's had four foals, three to race, three winners, and two are already black type horses, graded horses. One a graded stakes winner on the, you know, going to the Derby.
There's some fun things to play around with here, and the Vanderbilt presence, you know, kind of fits in one of those storylines that you and I frequently hit on, which is, you know, the foundation families or the foundation, you know, matriarchal, you know, breeders, the legends of the turf, as it were, invariably show up in so many of these.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, we'll see about Bourbonic, as it were. Let's shift over to the West Coast. We certainly have talked enough about Essential Quality, and you know, that that equation is unchanged. He's obviously you know, in the purple. Let's talk about Candy Ride, which is a topic, you know, and a stallion you enjoy riffing on. And here's one from the McAnally's, Ron and Deb McAnally, and a couple of very familiar mares and stake horses in Charm the Maker and Charm the Giant. And then when you get back to that third dam, here's Olympio, Olympic Charger. Mm-hmm. You want again stoutness in a pedigree and you know, female family. Stamina built. You've got an Empire Maker, a Giant's Causeway, and an Olympio, and even Majestic Light, the sire of the fourth dam, Light a Charm. And of course, Candy Ride, you know, he'll tick off any number of boxes.
Yeah, somebody had asked, or actually I saw somewhere where some people were, you know, discussing this horse and somebody had said, you know, it's all turf, and then somebody else said no, disagreed with him, and then somebody said, that person said, well, let's see what Sid Fernandez says on Steve Beck about whether this horse can run on dirt. Well, obviously, he just ran on dirt, won big, and it's really no surprise that he can run on dirt. First off, Candy Ride is a stallion, Argentine-bred son of Ride the Rails, who's on a Crypto Clearance, who's by Papiano. But he's a stallion that himself, he was undefeated in six starts. He was a brilliant racehorse from Argentina. He won on turf in Argentina. He won on dirt, grade ones in this country on dirt, and he won a grade ones in Argentina and brief career three starts here. So he's a grade one winner on turf and dirt. He obviously can get you a top horse on any surface. I mean, that's what's defined his career from the very beginning. You know, you take a horse like Shared Belief, one of his best. He was a G1 winner on dirt. He was a G1 winner on all weather. But he can get you grade one winners on dirt like he did with Game Winner and a bunch of others, right? He can also get you grade one winners on turf. And he can get you sprinters. He can get you two-year-olds. He can get fillies. He can get older runners. Obviously, we've got to mention that his best horse, or co-best, which shared belief, was Gunrunner, who got better with age. He earned close to $60 million. And was a horse that could stay in a mile and a quarter, especially as an older horse. He's a horse that obviously had the highest class that you could get. Now, one of the reasons that Candy Ride was, you know, kind of funky pedigree was able to really work in this country was because he had access to, you know, mares by Stormcat, AP Indy, you know, Mr. Prospector. You know, he had access to the best type of mares here for his pedigree. And Stormcat was a major nick for him. You know, in his first crop, he had a bunch of horses with Stormcat as the broodmare sire. And so when you have that kind of success, Steve, people go back to the well. And so when you look at a horse like Gunrunner, for instance, Gunrunner is out of a Giant's Causeway mare, right? And Giant's Causeway is the son of Stormcat. So this Candy Ride Stormcat nick really took off. He also had a great, you know, cross with the AP Indy line. And what we're seeing now with Rock Your World is that he's out of an Empire Maker mare. Empire Maker is the same sire line from which he's from. That's Fapiano, right? And so in this particular case, Rock Your World is inbred to Fapiano. Well, this component of being inbred to Fapiano has also been a major part of Candy Ride's success. If you look at Gunrunner, for example, even though he's out of a Giant's Causeway mare, he's also inbred to Fapiano. And in fact, he's in bet the Fat Piano exactly the same way, 4x4 to Fat Piano. Because in his case, his second name, Quiet Dance, is by Quiet American by Fat Piano. Well, what I'm bringing, I point this out because Rock Your World, it's a superb mating. He is in bed to Fat Piano, but if you look at his pedigree, who is his second dam by? His second dam is by the aforementioned Giants Causeway. So in Rock Your World's pedigree, you've got Giants Causeway as the second dam. In Gunrunner's case, Giants Causeway was side of the first dam. In Gunrunner's case, there's 4x4 in reading to Fat Piano. In Rock Your World's case, there's 4x4 in reading to Fat Piano. Moreover, if you look at one of Candy Ride's grade one winners, Separation of Powers, cheap by Candy Ride out of an Empire Maker mare, just like Rock Your World is. Okay? If you look at the horse that we mentioned on your show a few weeks back, the Candy Ride G1 winner that stands in New York, Leo Frick. He's by Candy Ride out of an Unbridled Song mare, Unbridled Song by Unbridled by Fat Piano. You have quite a few horses that are bred this way. And it just shows you basically this affinity that Candy Ride has not only for Stormcat, not only for AP Indy, but also for returning Fat Piano into his pedigree. And so this was extremely well done mating from the McAnally's. From what I understand, this colt is not your typical Candy Ride. You know, the Candy Rides can be smaller horses. Gunrunner, however, was a taller horse. He's 16'2". This horse apparently has quite some size to it. You got a kind of a view of that watching the race. So he's got size to him, and he's run on dirt now after making his first two starts on turf. So to answer the question, it's a great mating, and dirt is very much going to be a part of his career, as is turf, as he's proven on it.
This family is all McAnally three generations back. It's not just, you know, it's not just yes. The two charms.
And
the third dam.
Four generations when you include Rock Your World, because Rock Your World, McAnally, Charm the Maker McAnally,
right.
Charm the Giant McAnally, and Olympic Charmer McAnally.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
And all, you know, and also all stakes horses. I mean, it's impressive from that standpoint. I'm just looking, Sid, I got to tell you, as we're discussing this, this goes back to Bourbonic. Chuck Zachney was, I mentioned Chuck was supposed to be on, and So I just sent him a text because we're rescheduling for tomorrow. And I said, you know, the horse that you bred, Dancing a Fleet, just came up regarding Bourbonic. And he said, boy, he said, I forgot all about that. Yeah, co-breeder. You know that you've been involved in too many horses when we don't even remember that you bred the dam of a Wood Memorial winner. So it's kind of funny. I'll ask Chuck about that as well. But no, this family it's really a fun female family. I mean, having Olympio in there is fun to talk about. And, you know, he doesn't get enough conversation. I mean, it goes back to the late 80s. And my late friend Malcolm Soonis, Malcolm raved. Whenever he saw an Olympio in the pedigree, it always lit him up. and then Majestic Light, Pia d'Or, Jamaica Inn. Is in this pedigree. This is going all the way back into the 40s. I'm going to use the word stout yet again. And of course, with the way Sadler, you know, engineered this horse, getting that turf, the turf foundation. Yes, he's lightly raced, but he's one of many that are lightly raced heading into this Derby, Sid, and he's an interesting proposition. I mean, for the first triple digit buyer that we can talk about for the 3-year-olds, this horse is going to get plenty of attention and support.
Yeah, a couple of things too. Ron McNally trained Olympio for Vern Winchell. And, yes, it is stout. The first dam is by Empire Maker, and the second dam is by Giant's Causer. Both of those horses add a lot of stamina to a pedigree. In terms of the dam herself, you know, she was effective on turf, all weather, and dirt. Her older dog, full sibling to Rock Your World, She's Our Charm, a graded place. And, you know, she's a turf filly. She's been running on turf. So it was natural for them, with a lot of turf in his family, to try Rock Your World on turf as well. But there's nothing that precludes dirt, in my opinion. And, Charm the Maker, the dam of Rock Your World, as I said, was effective on dirt, turf, and all weather. The sire, Candy Ride, was effective on dirt and turf. Ron McNally trained Candy Ride. Candy Ride was bought by Sid and Jenny Craig out of Argentina for $900,000. Of course, McNally was at that time known for all his Argentine horses coming out from there and doing well over here. The Candy Ride had, feet issues and some ankle issues. That's what limited him to 6 starts. And as we've mentioned on the show before, he entered stud at John Secora's farm, Hillendale, $10,000 fee. And he's now currently standing for $75,000 at Lane's End. And the way that horse got moved to Lane's End is because, as I said, Sid and Jenny Craig had owned that horse, but Marty Wygod ended up buying a lot of shares in that horse. Marty Wygod is a Lane's End client, and so once he had controlling interest in the horse, the horse was moved to Lane's End, but John Secora really gets credit for starting his horse off, making the stallion. And, the way things work out, Steve, John exacted his revenge on Lane's End by getting Curlin from Lane's End to Hillendale after he and Craig Burnick purchased the Midnight Cry portion of Curlin,
right,
that became available, and then convinced the Barber Bankey to ship the horse.
Everybody seems happy at this point. This is going to be April and into May to cover your mare, and still time to talk to Sid and Roger. 510-490-1111. And Sid, Voltarine is hanging on to this Motown baby like it's gold. She does not want to take his or her sweet time coming out. So I can't even send you pictures yet
the fall. That's exciting, though, huh?
No, it's crazy. It's not unusual, first-time mare, first-time dam that, takes to get that baby out. But She is 3 weeks late, and it's we were already on pins and needles. So looking forward to jumping in the car and driving down to Hudson and sending you a picture. You're going to be the godfather of the fall.
Excellent. Can't wait.
Sid, thanks so much. Sid Fernando, everybody, and also for the Lasix portion. We'll take a break here, top of the hour. We'll come back. We've got Ron McQuaid is going to join us, and we'll talk to Ron. He had some thoughts about the situation involving using, having your older horse run without Lasix, and we'll have Ron comment. And then we'll have some Seth Merrow in here as well. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with